Welcome to the Health Policy Research Consortium podcast, a product of the Health Policy Research Consortium, a CTIS program, your weekly podcast empowering communities to use policy as a vehicle to improve their health and learn how to mobilize your community to create positive change where you live, work, and worship. Wait not a minute more. It's time to get started with the Health Policy Research Consortium podcast.
Welcome to the Health Policy Research Consortium podcast. I'm your host, Patricia Terrell, and joining me is Christy Gamble, who is the Director of Health Policy and Legislative Affairs with the Black Women's Health Imperative. And today we're going to talk about the failed repeal of the Affordable Care Act, the policy implications for minority communities. Christy, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Okay, well, as we all know, they've been really busy trying to repeal the Affordable Care Act, and yet again, no success. So tell us, what are the basics of the ACA? What problems was it designed to solve?
So the ACA was actually put into place to ensure that people had accessible and affordable health coverage with no penalties for any pre-existing conditions for age or previous insurance status. So individuals who dealt with conditions like diabetes and heart disease, they were not going to be charged a higher rate, as well as women not being charged a higher rate than men. Some of the parts of the provisions of the ACA include the individual and employer mandate, which requires that people have actual health insurance or they would have to pay a penalty. Another part of the ACA is that young people will be allowed to stay on their parents' insurance for up to the age of 26. So you had marketplaces that were set up. Some were facilitated by states and some were facilitated by the federal government itself. And the marketplaces where individuals will buy their health insurance. And that's where they would see certain provisions or certain benefits called essential health benefits. So there were 10 categories of healthcare services that had to be covered by insurers. And some of those services would be maternity care, mental health services, prescription drugs, and preventative services at no cost to the consumer. Another great part of the ACA were subsidies. So individuals who could not afford their health care premiums or the deductibles would be able to have assistance in helping them pay out-of-pocket costs or their premiums. That would come through premium tax credits or through cost-sharing reductions that were provided to insurers. And one of the last great things about the ACA is the expansion of Medicaid. So individuals who were typically left in the coverage gap, they made too much to be covered by the traditional Medicaid program and made too little to actually afford private insurance under the Affordable Care Act. They were allowed to have Medicaid benefits extended to them in certain states. So that would be for individuals who made an income of under 138% of the federal poverty level. And so 31 states actually opted into that expansion program as well as D.C.
Okay, now we know that the opponents of the law claim that the law has been an unmitigated disaster. What are the policy reasons for that claim, Christy?
So some of the opponents in Congress have said that the law has been a disaster because of rising premiums. So we're seeing a lot of insurers pulling out of the marketplace, which means less competition. So you have a monopoly being set up and insurers raising their prices, as well as because there's such an uncertainty, you have insurers that are in the market that are increasing their premiums to make sure their costs are actually covered due to rising medical costs and fewer young and healthy enrollees rolling into their plans as expected.
So who are the people who are being affected most by these increase in premiums?
So the people who are affected the most, unfortunately, are low income and people of color. They're the ones that you're going to see suffering and losing care under a repeal of the ACA. They were the ones that benefited the most, actually, from the ACA. We saw the ACA drop the uninsured rate to historic levels of 8.6%. And so those individuals who gained insurance through Medicaid expansion, as well as Medicaid, which are lower income folks, they're going to see their care removed under the repeal or restricted because people of color suffer disproportionately from health conditions, they're also going to see an impact to their health care.
Yeah, and I take it the ones impacted by the higher premiums, their income is just high enough where they cannot benefit from the subsidies, I take it.
Absolutely, and we know that under some of the repeal efforts, there would be no subsidies.
Amazing. Okay, so let's talk about the current effort to repeal the law. How many attempts have there been already?
I think there have been about five, and there are more in the works, so it's so hard to come up with the right number because there are so many, some that don't even make it to the floor to actually discuss.
So how do they differ? Do they differ at all?
Yes. So the latest attempt, the failed attempt, was the Graham-Cassidy bill, and that attempt was actually the worst repeal of the ACA that we have seen since the effort started, since the bill was implemented. So the Graham-Cassidy bill would have blocked granted health care, essentially. So the CBO actually stated that states will have enormous flexibility, so they will be in control of health care. And under this bill, Medicaid expansion was completely eliminated. The subsidies that we were referring to will be completely eliminated. So over 8.4 million people would lose any assistance in covering their premiums and deductibles. Over $1 trillion will be cut from Medicaid. So this was an extreme repeal of the ACA, because block granting is typically used by conservative members of Congress when they're trying to eliminate an actual program. So Medicaid is not a very desirable program for many folks in Congress. So shifting funding away from states that have expanded Medicaid was the desire when it came to this block grant, and also allowing states to determine what services they would cover and how much was another part of this bill. So this differed from the last ACA repeal attempts, because the last attempts actually provided some form of subsidies, but they weren't income-based, they were age-based. So a 60-year-old woman who actually made enough to afford her premiums would be able to receive tax credits. They weren't a lot of tax credits, but they received more than a lower-income young person. The other repeal efforts would have block granted just Medicaid, as well as eliminating Medicaid expansion, which we have seen. And the most disturbing was the elimination of our essential health benefits. States would have decided whether or not they wanted to cover certain services.
Well, let's talk about your organization, the Black Women's Health Imperative. Can you tell us about the health needs of the populations that your organization serves?
Absolutely. So the Black Women's Health Imperative, our goal is to make sure that the 21 million Black women and girls in this nation have access to the best health care, and they can live their most healthy and productive lives. So we recognize that this population has some trying needs, some needs that need to be addressed, such as Black women are 43% more likely to die from breast cancer compared to their white counterparts. They're also 40% more likely to have heart disease. So one out of two Black women will be diagnosed with heart disease. And we also know that Black women account for about 64% of new cases of HIV among all women. Blacks in America have high blood pressure. They're more likely to have a higher rate of obesity and diabetes. Then Black women are dying at record numbers from pregnancy-related complications, particularly in the South, which is where we see over half of our Black Americans living in the South. These are also the states that did not expand Medicaid. So there's some severe health needs of this population that we are seeking to help to advocate for better health and better policies that can actually address these issues and make sure these women can live productive lives.
And most of what you mentioned seem to be lifestyle issues. Is it that they're dying from these lifestyle issues because they do not have access to care, or they're just not going to the doctors, even if they have health care? Why is this happening?
So So that's a great question. So you have education and awareness, knowing what to eat, how to eat, when to exercise, how to exercise, even if you have limited mobility, as well as being aware of the ways to prevent. So that's where preventative services come into play, and being able to have access to healthcare has been largely the reason why we're seeing a lot of the disparity, because a lot of these populations, particularly in the South, there's limited access to quality and affordable healthcare. So we're seeing that. But one disturbing thing is that we're seeing Black women being three to four times more likely to die from pregnancy-related complications. So the maternal mortality rate is off the chart. And that stays the same regardless of education or socioeconomic background. And the reason why we're seeing those numbers is because of stress. So Black women are highly stressed, and that's due to Black women are reporting discrimination, the stress of dealing with discrimination and dealing with a lot of issues in violent neighborhoods. Just daily life is really impacting Black women.
Yeah, so you're finding so many single Black females who are heads of households these days, too.
Absolutely.
Amazing. So let's talk about what you've learned from your work about how minority communities can drive policy change. With all that's going on, what can minorities do to affect policy?
Well, I'm just so blessed to have this position. I previously worked on Capitol Hill on the opposite side, actually working particularly on drafting policies. But being on the outside of the Hill and working in the advocacy space, I've really learned the resilience of Black and brown people in this country, and the ability to mobilize to protect their health and their families has been astounding. I've just been amazed by the fact that we can send out a call to action and say, hey, this is what they're trying to do to your health care, to connect the dots on how it will impact them, and how we can just have Black and brown people just rise up and really take a step to call their representatives, speak to people at local and state level, and really advocate on their behalf. So I've learned that from my work. That's the most rewarding part of my job, as well as when it comes to being off the Hill and talking to members now that are on the Hill. I've learned how to really connect the dots, particularly for our conservative members, to let them see how if we can change these disparities, we can actually see savings to the economy, which really reaches and touches them more than the actual disparity itself.
And if you had to recommend the most important change or action that the minority communities can take to drive policy change when they hear about something that's happening with maybe not only the Affordable Care Act, but anything that involving policy and how it affects their lives and communities, what is the most important advice that you would give?
I would say the most important advice is to, besides vote.
That's a big one, right? It really is.
You have
especially
to vote.
Off season.
You have to vote in the midterm elections.
Yes.
Because your state and local policymakers, what they do directly impacts your health. And that comes down to not just health care, but also the issues that impact your health, such as the environment, your school boards. You have so many different people that can impact your health. So voting is key. But if we're off of voting, I would definitely say to continue to resist. And when I say resist, I mean, as young people say now, staying woke. So knowing the issues and not sitting back and waiting for threats to our health care, but really paying attention to what's happening, watching the news. I know so many people hate to watch the news now, but connecting to organizations that have a policy and an advocacy arm to it, to learn and follow them to see when something's happening on the Hill or even at their state legislature that they need to pay attention and really mobilize and join together and raise up and raise their voices and say, no, you're not going to take away my health care. No, you're not going to pay me less than my white counterparts. No, I deserve to have access to a voting booth. So we need to continue to resist, but be aware of what's going on.
And make those phone calls and send the letters to your legislators.
Absolutely.
Bombard them, right?
Absolutely.
Okay, so where do we go from here, Christy?
Oh, where do we go? So I think we kind of touched on where we can go from here, because there are still, as we speak, there are still efforts to repeal the ACA through budget resolutions and now through CHIP and so many other efforts up on the Hill. But we really need to stay resilient as a people. We need to start looking into ourselves running for local, state, and federal office. I know so many people say that all the time, but if we're tired of these policies that don't reflect our lived experiences, then we need to step up and actually be in those positions where we can be the ones creating the policies that impact ourselves, our communities, and our families. And as I said, vote.
Vote. Yeah, we can't say that enough, right?
We have to vote. We have to vote. I know there in Virginia there's the governor's race is coming up, and then Maryland has races. So everyone has races coming up. Vote. Really know who you're voting for as well, and do that research, and not just vote straight ticket, but vote for people who will care about your concerns and care about you and be accountable to you when they're in office.
Great. Thank you so much. What an awesome guest you've been. I mean, the information that you shared today is definitely information and news that we can use. Christy Gamble, Director of the Health Policy and Legislative Affairs with the Black Women's Health Imperative. Thank you so much, Christy.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to the Health Policy Research Consortium podcast. Remember, you have the power to use policy to improve your picture of health where you live, work, and worship. For more information on the Health Policy Research Consortium podcast, visit our website at www.hprc.info and like us on our social media channels, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr.
The research and information that we report during this show was supported by the National Institute on Minority Health and Health Disparities of the National Institutes of Health under award number 5U54MD008-60802. The content is solely the responsibility of the authors and does not necessarily represent the official views of the National Institutes of Health.